And our special guest this hour, Jim Marrs, talking about all kinds of things. Next up, we're going to ask him his take on just what's happening on this planet right now. So stick around. And your calls, of course, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Jim Marrs with us. Jim, you know, I still don't know what's happening in the, with the presidential election. I mean, I thought on the Democratic side, Hillary was a shoo-in, and though she's headed for the delegate count, Bernie Sanders had an incredible weekend. So that thing to me is kind of up in the air. And then the Republican, I still think it's going to be a brokered convention in Cleveland. What do you think?
Well, that's what they're working for, and that's kind of makes a travesty out of the Democratic process, I think. But I have good news for Hillary, okay? I wanted to remind her that Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison before he got to be president. So see, you know, there's always hope. But, oh, speaking of hope, though, I've got to mention August 19, 2021, UFOs within reach at Big Bear Lake in California, and I thought you were going to be there, but I found out
I'm there via Skype.
Yeah, so I hear. Is it true that you're going to be in some cave?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be interesting. I hope they have a good connection down there, wherever that might be.
I know that. Yeah.
But hey, I see that your partner in crime.
He's going to be
Danheiser.
There.
He's definitely going to be there, and the inevitable Chase Klutsky. She's a live wire. And then they've got a pretty good lineup there too, you know. If you haven't noticed, our friend Nick Redford and Stanton Freeman are all going to be there. Kathleen Martin, Mike Barra, Jason Martell.
Oh, Jason's a great guy. You know, when we were at Big Bear in the winter, Tom had coaxed me into getting a heavy, heavy coat. He said, George, this is colder than St. Louis. Where you've got all your coats, because, you know, just in Los Angeles, I just got light jackets, Jim.
You don't need a coat in Los Angeles.
So I had to go out. I bought a coat. I bought it online, had it shipped to the network, and I had this coat for Big Bear. And I got to tell you, I could have walked around in my T-shirt.
Well, I tell you what, the reason I'm looking forward to Big Bear is because it's going to be in August. And I want to tell you, North Texas in August is really not the place to be, particularly if you want to be outside.
All right, let's take some calls for you. And before I do, one more thing about this broken down system.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions?
Well,
it's weird, isn't it?
Let me say this. I have kind of changed my opinion upwardly on Donald Trump. Early on, I wasn't too impressed with him because, you know, number one TV personality, you know, flamboyant businessman, blah, blah, blah. But the main thing was, looking into his background, he's got such close ties with Israel, the Zionists, and with the Clinton family. And I was really afraid that he was going to be put in there as a spoiler. In other words, this still could happen. We get to the Republican National Convention, and the old guard says, no, he's just too volatile. He's too crass. We can't have him. And so they end up choosing somebody else. Then Trump, even though he said he won't do this, he would probably say, well, you know, the people are behind me. He said, I'm going to run as a third-party candidate. If he does, that's going to split up the
Republicans.
High conservative vote, and Hillary gets in.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been afraid of. But I want to tell you something. After reading some stuff from people who are close to Trump, and then from looking at his rallies, which tend to be average folks, good folks, with no big problem, except for the pro-Hillary, pro-leftist people that are causing all the violence and then trying to, you know, throw that off on him. And then I think you've had that Oates fella on your program before that does the reverse speech.
Yeah, David Oates.
Yeah, David Oates. And look at all the material he's got. And all the other candidates, when they say something in reverse speech, they're somehow agents or hiding something. And Trump, he's exactly what he says he is, you know.
Reverse or forward or backward, he's the same, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, they'll say, well, it may be too radical. It may be blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, but hey, look, folks, you know, the Republicans, you go back to the first Bush administration, then you got a Democratic administration under Clinton, and then you've got another Republican under George Bush Jr., and then you've got Obama. Holy cow. You know, both parties have had their chance, and we're still in a mess economically, militarily, you know, in bombing people all around the world. So we definitely need a change, and so it's going to be wild.
It sure is. Yeah, I've been reading Seymour Hersh's book about the dark side of Camelot.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, the things that went on in 1960 with Kennedy to defeat Nixon were absolutely unbelievable. I mean, right. Buying West Virginia, buying Chicago, working with the mob. I mean, it was incredible stuff, Jim.
Yeah, and here's what's creepy to me and scary, is that all that took place when there were paper ballots that could be recounted and could be checked. Today, with these computer voting machines, you know, the hackers have a field day, and there's no guarantee that any of our votes are being counted properly.
Oh, that's true. Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Mike in Montana. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Good evening, George. Good evening, Jim.
Howdy.
It's kind of interesting you were talking about Dallas there. My question is, Mr. Morris, do you believe, what's your opinion about Jack Ruby, and do you believe he was forced to kill Oswald?
Ah, this is right down your alley, Jim.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I tell you what, I don't think I could do any better than to paraphrase what he said at one of the few opportunities that he had to be interviewed after he shot Oswald, and he got they ordered a new trial, and so he had to go back to court for the new trial, and he was granted a new trial, but it never happened because he died of cancer before that. But when he showed up in court, some of the local TV crews were there, and one of them interviewed him, and he is still there on sound and film, I believe with Channel 11 in Fort Worth, and he said, "The true facts of what has occurred will never be brought before the American people because of the people that have so much to lose, you know, by telling the truth." And the interviewer said, "Jack, you mean people in high offices?" And he said, "Yes." So there you go, folks, from the mouth of Jack Ruby. He did what he was ordered to do. And now keep in mind that for years after the assassination, the official government story was that Jack Ruby had no connection to anybody. He was just...
He knew Oswald.
Oh, of course. Now we know that he and Oswald were in touch. We know that he had worked with the mafia. He was not a made mafia guy because he was Jewish, but he was worked for the mafia, even ran messages for Al Capone in Chicago as a youngster. So he was totally under control by the mafia. And when they told him that he was going to have to go into the police station and kill Oswald, he didn't want to do it. In fact, I'm convinced that there is evidence to show that he tried to warn people about that. He even called the Dallas dispatchers the night before and said, "You got to change the transfer agreement because we're going to kill him." And yet they didn't. They still did the same thing. And then I've always been amazed at when they brought Oswald out through the basement of the police station, and here's all these newsmen, a whole crowd of people, mm-hmm. all this hubbub going on. They got one hand handcuffed to one cop, and the other hand handcuffed to another cop, and he's spread eagle walking through there, so he can't.
He's a perfect target.
Perfect. And I worked around police for years and years and years, and I'm seeing them handcuff people with their hands in front of them. I'm seeing them handcuffed with their hands behind them. I've seen them handcuffed to radiators or a car handle or something so they can't get away. But that's the only instance I can think of when they handcuff somebody spread eagle and walk them through a potentially dangerous situation.
And wasn't Jack Ruby interviewed by the then columnist Dorothy Kilgallen, who died herself? The whole thing was weird.
Yeah. Well, you just hit the nail on the head, George. The whole thing is weird. It's weird from start to go. They number one, they started off violating Texas law. At that time, there were no laws against assassinating the president, and so it fell under homicide laws in Texas. And under the law, you couldn't move the body until there'd been a coroner's inquest. Well, the coroner shows up at Parkland Hospital, and the Secret Service drew guns on him, cursing, hollering, screaming, said, "This is the president, we're taking him out of here." And he said, "But that's not the law." And later they said, well, they had been told to do that by Lyndon Johnson. Well, if that's the case, then isn't it ironic and isn't it something that one of the first actions that Lyndon Johnson took upon becoming president of the United States was to violate the laws of his own state?
Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Next up, Lakeland, Florida. Hello, Gordon. It's your turn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jim.
Sure.
George, I have a theory about what could be done to settle the problem between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. You said something about my wife, and I'm trying to pitch this, and it's not real popular. Now, a lot of the talk show hosts are telling them to knock it off because, you know, I'm one of the conservatives that don't want there to be infighting and hand the thing over to Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have a proposal that I think might work, and I want to run it by y'all. Both men claim to be Christians, and if they do, then they should obey Jesus where he said three things. One, love your friends. Two, love your enemies. And this is the big one. Three, if you have a complaint or a grievance, go to your brother privately. In Matthew 18:15, don't go to the public and stir it up. Go to him privately, discreetly, and if that don't work, drag one or two other people with you as witnesses so that things can be established. And I've been trying to pitch this to everyone, and I think I'm getting persecuted because I'm a Christian, and people are treating me like I'm a nobody, of course, except y'all. And y'all guys know me, Gordon Watts from Lakeland. I mean, everyone knows me, so I want to run this by y'all. Is this a good idea or what?
Wouldn't hurt, Gordon. It wouldn't hurt, especially with what's going on. I mean, I've never seen a campaign where they yank each other's wives in on the thing.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Gordon, I think you have a great idea there, but see, you're operating under the assumption that this is a serious political campaign between serious people who want to serve the country. You know, what we're witnessing is a dog and pony show, and it's all about ratings, and it's all about who can one-upmanship and everything else. It's about everything that's probably wrong with
it's a media circus.
Yeah, exactly. And they play to that, you know. It's just like in the media. If it's a reality TV show, please understand, it's never reality. Okay, there's always a food truck on the other side of the hill or cameras in their face. Okay, but so they have to do outrageous stuff to draw an audience and build up the ratings and everything. But Gordon, let me ask you this: do you ever watch the World Federation of Wrestling?
Oh yes. Well, not real often, but I see where you're going with this.
Yeah, not real often because you know it's rigged, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so's this political system.
But it's great entertainment, Jim.
Oh, yeah, it's a great dog and pony show.
Body slams to the middle and all that.
Right.
All right, thanks, punches. Gordon. Let's go to Dave in Seattle, Washington. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, good evening. I first heard about the Aurora, Texas alien crash when I saw Tilly Snyder's photograph online. I'd never heard this story before. Oh, it's a photograph of the gravestone. Now, Jim was saying that the gravestone he was talking about had been stolen, and I know that after Tui's photo kind of got circulated around the Internet, the gravestone was stolen. Now, I think Jim stated at an earlier date, I was wondering if they replaced it. If they did replace it, who did it? And if people are stealing the thing, do you think it's a souvenir, or does someone not want people to know about this? And I'll let you speculate on that. And, I think Tui, by the way, was on Coast to Coast late last year, wasn't she?
Yep, sure was. Mm-hmm. Sure was.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
My problem is I'm not sure which photograph you're talking about. I don't know if she was showing the actual headstone, but I suspect that what you saw was somebody's reproduction of a headstone. In fact, right now, last time I was over at the Aurora Cemetery, which was only like less than a month ago, they've got a huge boulder sitting there, you know, and it's not even on the exact place of the grave, but it's very, very close. It's within a few feet, and I had never seen that before, and I was told that they put that there so that they can direct people to the correct area. So I don't know if it was a picture of that. And then there was somebody else that some private citizen, I believe, who kind of worked up their own little marker thing, and it was there for a while, but they took that up. And so now to your basic question, the original tombstone that they had put in place, I'm assuming, back in 1896, was the one that disappeared in 1973, the one I saw originally, and the one that I do have a photograph of the real one, and it's really, really small. But to answer your question, I think either the cemetery association or the feds took the headstone because this is part of the deep cover-up.
Jim, the original newspaper article of the 1800s, what did it say specifically?
Oh.
Did it talk about some kind of aerial craft or anything like that?
Well, you know, here's what's really fascinating, George. You're going to love this. This was the Dallas Morning News, okay, of April the 19th. This was a few days later when it appeared in the paper. And the story was just a little one-column story down towards the middle part of the page. And, of course, what everybody's argued about for so long is that it was just somebody sent in a hoax story to the newspaper. But if you actually get the entire front page, there are 16 stories on the front page of the Dallas Morning News, April 19th, 1897. And they range from correspondence as far north as southern Oklahoma and as far south as almost to Austin, Texas. And every single one of these stories is talking about the object flying through the air. Now, George, you're going to love this one. I'm sure you've had people ask you time and time again, well, you know, if they're here, why don't they just land and say,
and make themselves known.
Yeah, make themselves known. Hey, we come in peace. Well, let me read you the little piece that's on the same page of the Dallas Morning News that the Aurora spaceship is on. It says, Granbury, Texas, April 17th. Newt Grisham last night at 9:30 o'clock while drilling the Riddle rifles discovered the mysterious flying genie of which we've heard so much. Newt is a very warsome young man, being a populist, but he could not stand the sight of the air machine. He ordered the company to open fire on the object, which they did, and the whole town was soon aroused. Can you imagine? What is it, Joe Bob? I don't know. Shoot at it. Now, George, you can see why they don't just come and land.
That's right. Or obliterate us. Andre in Dallas, Texas is with us now. Andre, go ahead.
Hi, Jim and George. How you doing?
Good, Andre.
Hey, Jim, when is that event going to be in Aurora with Travis Walton? Because I'm definitely going to be there.
Yeah, that's that Saturday, April the 16th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And
it's a one-day event, right?
I'm sorry?
It's a one-night, one-day event.
Just one day because, see, this is the first time the city of Aurora has ever acknowledged all this. You know, in the years past, most people there didn't really want to talk about it. But, hey, this is a new time. This is a new century. People are a little bit more open. So that town's getting behind it. So I'd advise you to look at their website. That's www.auroratexas.gov, and also you can check Vore, Texas.
You should put a link up with your website, Jimmy.
Yeah. Be sure and check. Yeah, you can check my website. That's jimmars.com. Oddly enough, check with Vortexas, VORTEXAS.net, and that's got some information on there. And you might want to go ahead and sign up early so you'll be sure and get on the luncheon that they're planning.
How are you doing at airports these days, Jim?
How am I doing at airports?
Yeah, haven't you had some TSA issues before?
Oh, I always have. But you know what? Here's something weird. I don't understand it. I used to just kind of give them a hard time, not too hard, because they would shoot you, I guess, or certainly make you miss your plane.
They would shoot you.
For example, one time one of these TSA guys is groping all over me and asked me all these questions. I said, how come you guys aren't down on the border stopping all those people from coming across? He kind of like a slap in the face. He looked at me, he smiled, he said, you know, I've wondered the same thing.
We're going to come back and take final questions with Jim Mars on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Mark Anthony joins us. We're going to talk about evidence of eternity. I'm looking forward to that, but we're going to come back in a moment and take more calls with Jim Mars here as we talk about many things going on this planet. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Jim Mars with us. We're going to get to your calls as well in our final segment here. Jim, I want to ask you about drinking water. Are they still pelting fluoride in the water all over the country?
Oh, yes. But now there's beginning to be fights with different city councils over this. And yet, as all the evidence comes forward, sodium fluoride, in fact, I have a photograph of sodium fluoride that was sold back in the 1920s, and it says clearly on the label, it says rat poison.
Poison, yeah. Yeah, or you see that skull with the X on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, wait a minute. So why are they putting poison in our water? Well, it turns out that sodium fluoride was a byproduct of the aluminum manufacturing process, and that it was so nasty that they were prohibited from dumping it in the rivers or the oceans. And then they also found out during World War II, the German Nazis found that by putting just a little dab of sodium fluoride in the water of the concentration camps, that it kept the inmates kind of dulled down and passive and non-resistant, you know? So it really makes you wonder, why are they putting it in our water today? And about three-quarters of the water supply of the United States, especially in the big cities, is they're putting sodium fluoride in the water. Why? Well, because there was some people connected to the aluminum industry that were did a study, and they seemed to indicate that just a little bit of sodium fluoride in the water might prevent some tooth decay by children, mostly male, between the ages of 6 and 12. So just trying to reach that one little six-year gap of people, they now put in all the water supply everywhere. The same stuff the Nazis put in to keep people dumbed down.
Keep them dumb.
You know?
Breaking story, by the way. Hijacked Egypt airplane just lands in Cyprus. That's all we know right now. Gosh, it never ends, Jim.
Well, at least they landed.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope they get off okay. Let's go to Roger in Delaware now. Raj, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hey, I think the whole Hillary Clinton thing and John Podesta is amazing. You know, in the last few days, we've been hearing more and more about that. Last night on Coast, they had Tom DeLonge, the rock star mm-hmm. from the band Blink 182. It almost sounds like he's a youth ambassador for this. But I mean, we were just talking about the fluoride, and it leads me into chemtrails. You know, I mean, I've heard the thing on Coast before. If they're not drinking it from the drinking water, maybe we'll rain it down on them. And I was curious.
Yep.
I recently had someone who was a one of the various UFO reporting centers told me that the late great Dr. Roger Lear thought that the chemtrails were somehow related to the alien abduction phenomenon, and I do believe they're definitely related to the UFO, to the orange orb phenomenon. And I'm curious if you guys think that there is a UFO chemtrail connection of any kind.
Well, I tend to think there is, although I can't put my finger on it. But one reason I tend to think there is that several years back, a group of Royal Air Force people got together. They were concerned about chemtrails, and they did a study. And they found, counting all the chemtrails and the airplanes that they could account for in Europe, in North America, in Australia, in Canada, they figured out that it would take something like 25,000 airplane flights a day to produce those chemtrails. And folks, there's not that many pilots that can fly, you know, big, huge, wide-bodied jets up in the upper atmosphere. And then I, too, have seen a couple of photographs that people were trying to take of a chemtrail plane. And oddly enough, here's the chemtrail, and it's moving along, but there doesn't seem to be anything at the head of it. And in another photograph I have in my files, there's like a little round object. So there is a thought that, yeah, maybe it's connected to the UFOs. And that gets really scary because I had one of the remote viewers that was in the Army, one of their senior remote viewers, who got real interested in, or concerned, I should say, about chemtrails. So he took a remote view look of what it was, and he said the only way he could express what he got about what these chemtrails were about is the term terraforming, if you know what that
mm-hmm.
means. That means changing the environment
That's
of
right.
the planet.
Nick in Michigan now. You're up with us, Nick. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Howdy.
So, George, I originally called regarding the Centers for Disease Creation and Promotion laying claim to ownership of multiple patents on multiple genetically engineered pathogens. And I think this is pursuant to John Rappaport's expose. So I'd like Jim to comment on that, but I'd first like to call attention to Catherine Albrecht. I believe, George, Catherine has a search engine called IxQuick.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I think
right.
So.
If you put into IxQuick, Trump, PSY hyphen ops, PSYOPS, all caps, PSY hyphen ops, you'll find some astonishing data that's absolutely irrefutable, incontrovertible. And also, George, there's, I know you support people like me who are veterans.
Sure do.
We have a most honorable, righteous Marine Corps vet who has an internet broadcast every Sunday night, 10 o'clock central for 3 hours. It's called Incendiary Radio, incendiaryradio.com, George. I have yet to hear a more astonishingly brilliant and insightful freelance investigative journalist. I wish you would seek Robert at Incendiary Radio for an interview sometime. And lastly, George, but when you bring up fluoride, when I read Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Volume 2, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for it in 1970. He actually records that sodium fluoride was used in the Gulag, and he actually IDs the organizers and conductors of the Gulag, which are Aaron Soltz, Yakov Rappaport, Lazar Kogan, Motsi Berman, Genrikh Yagoda, and Naftali Frankel. And according to Solzhenitsyn, they're all Babylonian Talmudic Hebrews. And that calls attention, George. I hope you'll reach out to Joseph P. Farrell, PhD, whom you've interviewed in the past, because as Webster Tarpley has documented, these political theater psyop circuses every 4 years are nothing more than presidential puppetry. And that's the book of one of Tarpley's close friends, Andrew Krieg, who authored the book Presidential Puppetry. But Joseph P. Farrell, in his books Financial Vipers of Venice and Babylon Banksters, George and Jim, those are the entities that I'm positive were responsible for contracting out the murders of JFK and his brother and MLK, because they all oppose the Vietnam War. And like JFK, he opposed Israel going nuclear with nuclear weapons, and he had designated an entourage to go over to Desmona and ensure that any nuclear weapons production was to be eradicated.
Well, I'll check out the Incendiary Radio person. And, Jim, are you aware of that show?
Only vaguely. I'm sorry. I've got my head buried in a new book I'm working on right now about the Illuminati.
No.
Yeah, maybe I can fill you in on what's real and not about the Illuminati.
But, Nick, great points, by the way.
Yes.
Great points.
Lots yeah, and well, these are things that we need to look into. And here's what's really interesting is that John Rappaport, I certainly recommend him. He's a good journalist. And I also I'm friends with Dr. Farrell. I certainly would recommend him. And what's really interesting, George, is that those two, plus a lot of plethora of others, have been following the same investigative trail that I have. And what's really interesting is we all seem to be coming up with the same answers, the same conclusions.
We're going to post on our Twitter feed, by the way, Jim, a picture of what could be that alien headstone. It's weird looking. I mean, clearly it looks like a spaceship on the headstone. Strange.
Where would I find that?
We will post it on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
You're into high technology now, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, I finally learned that if I turn 9 on the dial, I can reach the emergency line.
I love it. All right, let's go to Fred in Clarendon, Texas now. Fred, you're on with Jim Mars. Go ahead.
Howdy, George and Jim.
Hi.
Howdy.
A couple of items, if I might. First of all, I was a student of Jim's. Back in the 80s, I was convalescing from brain surgery, and I took that course on the assassination of President Kennedy.
Well, perfect.
And that was a tremendous course. He's one journalist that I have a great amount of respect for, and so therefore I've been a skeptic about these UFOs. But if he sees something in there, then there may be something to it. As a matter of fact, me and a friend of mine, we went out to that cemetery in Aurora, but there was no grave marker there, and there also happened to be a great big old rattlesnake sunning himself on one of the graves that was in the area where we thought that the grave might be, but we never could find it. Have they intentionally hidden that grave?
I think so. As I said earlier in the program, I think that either the Cemetery Association took it up and put it away somewhere so they wouldn't have an inordinate amount of people traipsing through their cemetery, or it's entirely possible that the government, who, if you remember, earlier in the program, I mentioned the 1942 memo from George Marshall, which said they've been looking into this stuff since the crash of 1897. So I think they may have been the government taking it up to maintain the UFO secrecy. But hey, I appreciate and applaud your skepticism. We should all be very skeptical, but make sure you do it all the way around. Make sure you are as skeptical of official pronouncements as you are of people making their claims.
By the way, if you need to find our Twitter feed, it is at coasttocoastam.com up there at the lower left, and you'll see it up there, and you can just take care of it that way. Why did I do that popping sound?
I don't know. That was cute.
Let's go to Dave in Kauai, Hawaii. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, Jim. How's it going? You guys are awesome.
Thank you, David.
I got a quick question about back to the Kennedy subject. Are you familiar with the Gemstone Files?
Oh yeah, very much so. In fact, years ago, I think while I was still working for the newspaper, I tried to track and verify as much as that information as possible. And for example, this might interest you. In the Gemstone Files, it says that Clay Shaw, who was of course prosecuted for the Kennedy thing in the Jim Garrison investigation in New Orleans, they said that he was a member of this commercial, Centro Comercial Mondial, or whatever it is, World Trade Centers, that was headquartered in Italy and involved some people in Canada. And so I actually went to a library and found a 1962 city directory for New Orleans. And sure enough, Clay Shaw listed himself as a board member of Permandex, this mysterious organization that, as you well know from the Gemstone Files, was named as one of the orchestrators of the assassination. So, yes, I found a lot of things. I'd have to say I could not verify everything in the Gemstone Files, but I could verify a whole lot, and it was correct.
Very correct. Yeah, I'm wondering if you know anything about the history of Jacqueline Kennedy marrying Aristotle Onassis, and why, and if it was a forced marriage according to the Gemstone Files. There were some mysterious things happening there with her.
Right. Well, from what I know about it, I don't think it was a arranged marriage, because they had kind of been carrying on with each other even before Kennedy got killed. I think this is a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, because there is a lot of evidence to suggest that there was CIA involvement in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and who was one of the biggest enemies of the CIA was Aristotle Onassis. In fact, back in the 50s, when he was trying to get ahead in the shipping business, there were CIA operatives attacking his ships off the coast of South America. So I think this was a case of where she went to the one person in the world that she felt like could probably keep her safe from the CIA.
What an incredible, strange world we live in, Jim.
Very strange.
My God. Ryan in St. Louis, first-time caller. What's squeeze you in, Ryan? Go ahead.
Yes, George, Jim, did either one of you see a program on the History Channel last November when they were talking about the Kennedy assassination? This man out of Australia, he came up, did an exposé on it, and he determined that the killing shot of Kennedy was done accidentally by a Secret Service person or CIA person in the rear vehicle behind Kennedy's car. They heard some gunshots. He reached down on the floor, pulled out a rifle, and when he did, the car lunged forward, because they were trying to get Kennedy away from the scene.
Out of there,
and
yeah.
He pulled the trigger and shot him in the back of the head.
Yeah, I heard that and saw that. And Jim, I don't think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think it was a triangular shoot, and they got him from three different angles, and the kill shot came from the front, not the back. And, gosh, I wish we'd get to the bottom of it, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, let me disabuse you of that. This was a theory that came out not from Australia, but actually from some gun expert here in the United States. And then it was turned into a book. The allegation was that a Secret Service agent had an AR-15 and it was going to return fire on the book depository against Oswald, but he slipped and he fell back and the gun accidentally went off and he hit Kennedy in the back of the head. I'm sorry, but that's all totally false and totally ludicrous, even though the major media made a big deal about it. And this here's a tip-off, folks. If Time, Newsweek, NBC, CNN, CBS, if they all make a big deal about something in the Kennedy assassination, you can probably write that off.
You got that right. Hey, Jim, keep in touch, and I'll see you at the Joshua Tree and then Skype and everything else, okay?
Right. Don't come to Aurora if you can.
That would be nice if I can get away. It's not too far. I'm in St. Louis right now. Thank you. Jim Mars, of course, he is one of a kind. By the way, I'm going to have a major event myself on June 18th in St. Louis. There'll be more information on that coming, but circle the calendar, June 18th at the Lindenwood University. And I'll be back in a moment with Mark Anthony as we talk about his work, Evidence of Eternity.